Hello and welcome to the CFO Playbook podcast. My name's David McClelland. I'm a journalist and broadcaster. I cover business, technology and leadership. And here on the CFO Playbook, I get under the skin of how world-class finance leaders from across various industries leverage technology, as well as set goals, make plans, manage teams and much, much more. And in today's episode, we're talking about finance, pharma, and artificial intelligence with somebody right at the intersection of all three.
People tend to overestimate the impact of technology over the short term and underestimating over the long term. And that links to how you use KPI, you measure value. Okay. Traditional ways of measuring value from ERP project don't apply to AI because AI works through sprints, innovation, and the requirements are evolving over time, and you co-create with your customers, basically. The CFOs and finance organization need to start to look at themselves not just as guardians of value, but drivers of transformation and innovation.
A reminder that the CFO Playbook is here every month with exclusive interviews and insights from world-class finance leaders. So do subscribe and listen back through our extensive back catalogue. Don't be afraid to get in touch, as many of you do. Your suggestions really do help to shape our shows. Right, let's meet today's guest.
This episode of the CFO Playbook is brought to you by Soldo. Trusted by over 25,000 organizations across 31 countries, Soldo combines pre-programmed cards, an intuitive app, and a powerful management platform to replace manual processes with efficiency and control. To find out more or to book a demo, visit soldo.com.
Ricardo Caliano, VP of Finance at what we'll refer to today as a multinational pharmaceutical company. It's great to have you with us here on the CFO Playbook.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, David.
Tell me where you're joining us from today and what's your work week looked like so far?
Okay, I'm joining from London. And my working week so far has been full of sign-off meetings, working with different markets, deploying AI tools as part of my job. So a lot of excitement, interesting discussions, and lots of fun in AI implementation, which is what I'm doing at the moment.
Well, which leads us on very much to what we're doing at the moment. Interesting discussions, fun maybe. I want to chat today about this space in which you operate, this finance and pharma space, and your insights and experience in using AI to bring value to both of those, because it's quite a unique set of skills and experiences, I think, that you've nurtured there, Ricardo. And I'd like to know how you've got there as well as part of our chat. Does that all sound all right to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go ahead.
First things first, I appreciate that you are here as Ricardo Caliano. We can't say too much about your current employer, listed company, regulated industry, all of that good stuff. But what are you able to tell us about what your current position entails, and in particular, what role AI plays in that?
Yeah, thank you very much. So as you mentioned, I'm VP Finance, so I'm part of the finance organization. And at the moment, I'm running a global AI program where we're looking at deploying AI tools to optimize our commercial investment. So it's a global program across many markets. And as I said, the focus is in the intersection of finance and the business and commercial, which is, I think, an exciting space.
It really is an exciting space, and it's quite a unique, as I say, set of skills that you've brought together, a unique set of experiences. And I also want to go into your career journey in finance and pharma and the path that's led you to where you are right now. But first, let's chat about finance and about your experience of where artificial is well placed to add some real value. I was in a conversation with a CIO recently about how AI is bringing value to his organization. And he summarized AI value as the three P's: AI in processes, AI in products, and AI in productivity. Now, of course, that's the view from a CIO who sits at a very different seat around the table than a CFO, perhaps. And it will vary from organization to organization. But Ricardo, in what ways are you seeing AI add value, particularly from the seat of the finance part of the organization?
So that's a very good point. I will simplify, and I think there were there are probably three levers. One is productivity more in general. I will put process under that because process optimization is a form of productivity. You have efficiency that are delivered and can be delivered in different parts of the process. Speed and automation are part of that. There is another one that helps in terms of risk mitigation, compliance control. So it can add value by reducing the risk and automating some of the checks and outliers identification that are part of managing well a finance organization. And the most exciting space that probably hasn't been mentioned specifically, that I think is the space where AI can generate the most interesting outcomes is really insights generation. So insights generation, and I'm specifically focusing on insights that are related to business outcomes. And that's the intersection between finance and the business. So finance comes with a background of, strong backgrounds around data, around, looking for profitability, driver, cost. And when that is matched with strategies to drive growth, you really have insights generation that are exponentially helping the business grow more. So I think insight generation is not just forecasting, which is predictive analytics, but is really helping the business with all the data available make better decisions. And AI in that space can be very powerful and probably at the moment a little bit underutilized.
What can you give us in terms of examples then about the insights and about how they contribute to that to that top line? Give us an example, maybe from pharma, maybe from somewhere else, about where you are seeing real deliverable value here. Because that's one of the challenges with AI, and we're going to touch on this a lot more throughout this conversation, is that it can seem somewhat nebulous, somewhat intangible, somewhat kind of very high level. So finding those use cases, finding those examples of where, yes, I've seen this, yes, I've done that, can be so, so beneficial.
Yes. So let me speak more in general. And I think that applies to many industries. I think a lot of business decisions are made based on experience, probably incomplete data sets and insights that are generated in silos. Okay. And they're probably not generated real time. They're generated along lengthy processes. And I think this is the value of what I would call composite AI. So blending different AI techniques. We didn't get into that, but AI is not a monolith. It's an ensemble of techniques that exist since the 50s, 60s that now are on steroids because of, technology advances, neural network and stuff. By combining traditional machine learning models, and you can look in retail and other industries, marketing mix models, which are basically models that allow you to look at the impact of spending different commercial channels to sales, is a widespread use case that is applied across different markets and different industries. Combine with GenAI, and GenAI in this space helps you really to get real-time insights from different data sets. You can start to see, and then you can combine it and link it to additional machine learning model that can look at pricing or other variables. You can see that what you're doing, you're basically helping the business generate real-time insight. And you're doing that starting with from the point of view that this is a financial mindset of what is the optimal resource allocation that you can get for the amount of money you're investing. What is, the Americans say bang for your buck. Other people might say ROI, but it's essentially the same. So if I have a limited set of resources and I need to optimize my outcome, what do I do? And I think this is a space where combining different techniques can really get a lot of value. And this is where traditional machine learning is very helpful. Generative AI is very helpful, and other techniques are coming up more and more. You then might link that with forecasting models that are also evolving and improving, and you're generating quick real-time insight, because what you want to have is the business focusing on not gathering data, analyzing data, but focusing on picking different scenarios and understanding the assumption behind each one of them and understanding real time if their assumption is confirmed or not. And this is where you drive speed of decision making and better decisions.
Yes, indeed, because it's very easy to worry about what's going into the machine in terms of the data quality. And we'll talk about data quality and making sure that the foundational pieces of that triangle are there so that you do have confidence in what the output is. But ultimately, the real benefit here, the real value, is being able to look at the insights and then being able to make decisions based upon what you're learning there. You mentioned a great example there, that kind of top line, if you like. Obviously, we've also mentioned the efficiencies, the process efficiencies, the productivity efficiencies, kind of that help the bottom line there. I guess there are opportunities all over the place. Thinking specifically about our finance audience for CFO Playbook, you know, opportunities in, say, finance and procurement, you know, there's lots of ways of joining the dots between different parts of the organization and finding insights, finding value, finding outcomes that maybe just weren't even visible before. And that's where these different types of AI that you mentioned, whether it is machine learning, deep learning, or the generative AI, that's where these all start to come together and create that kind of super, super value capability, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. And AI is also helping, if it's appropriately implemented, to bring an end-to-end process view, which is, you mentioned procurement. So procure to pay is a whole process that in some companies is a little bit split between procurement on a part and then finance on the transactional part, etc. But procure to process is essentially one process. And again, there's a new AI tools and algorithm that allow to optimize different parts of the processes. And I think that brings value. However, what is important, and this is not AI, but it's traditional process mapping. And in my previous career, I've also been a Lean Sigma black belt. So I was working and doing like process optimization programs. So the end-to-end view of the process and process ownership is fundamental, particularly when you implement AI. In the world of agents, where in the future you might automate parts of a process, if this end-to-end view is not kept under control, you might create more complexity and you might actually generate these economies of scale instead of economies of scale. So I think there's something to be said about how you implement AI as well. And how you implement AI as well is not linked to technology, is linked to understanding your processes, understanding what is waste in a process, what is value add, what can be automated, et cetera, which is traditional, process mapping and process optimization.
And there is the Six Sigma black belt speaking right there. And on that, on it being not just a technology conversation here, we've seen many organizations that have been on, maybe are still on, that digital transformation journey of some description. And now AI, like you say, it's been on steroids for the last, 3 years or so as we record, with that generative AI kind of catalyst moment there. AI's coming along and that's demanding even further transformation in organizations as well. And, it's easy to say change is the new constant and all of that. But Ricardo, how do you reflect on the impact of this constant change, this unpredictability for CFOs and finance functions?
It's a very good point, and it's definitely accelerating. Although we've been, many organizations have been through finance transformation programs over and over. In my previous company and career, I also worked on business process outsourcing in the traditional, outsourcing period. So it's been a constant. Now, I would say I like this quote from Waldo Emerson, the American philosopher and poet, which said, "In skating over thin ice, our safety is in our speed," which means that as the ground is like shaking a little bit and our foundation are changing, our safety in our speed. So it's not in trying to control things even more, in guarding the status quo, but it's in accelerating innovation. And I think finance has a great role in driving digital transformation in a company. So obviously tech in organization provides the platforms, the resources, etc. But there's a function that's uniquely positioned to drive that, and it is finance, because finance understands processes, understands data, with the view of numbers, actually can look at each part of the organization. So I really think that accelerating in innovation and investing in that is really important. And I think that also requires a little bit of mindset change. We're going to probably talk about metrics, value, etc. So, but there's two things that I think are important. One is, there's another quote that I read, which said that people tend to overestimate the impact of technology over the short term and underestimating over the long term. And that links to how you use KPI, you measure value, okay? Traditional ways of measuring, value from ERP project don't apply to AI. And we can talk about that later on, because AI works through sprints, innovation, and requirements are evolving over time, and you co-create with your customers, basically. That's one thing. The other thing is the CFOs and finance organization need to start to look at themselves not just as guardians of value, but drivers of transformation and innovation. So basically helping the business making the best decision with the resources that are allocated. And again, I'm coming back to resource allocation. I think that's very important. And I think that can be very exciting for some finance people, can be very scary from other finance people, because the mindset of traditional finance professional has been built through, being skeptical, being objective, being detached, criticizing, checking, verifying, show me the money, what is the KPI, timelines, etc., which is great, but it's a mindset that needs to evolve in the age of AI, because in the age of AI, you're getting into experimentation and you don't get things 100% right immediately. You're building a platform that delivers exponential value.
So much in there to unpack, Ricardo. And, that's a cliche of the chief finance officer being the office of no, for example, and not necessarily being that enabler. But how you're talking about it there is being that enabler, being that that inspiration part of the organization. And it strikes me that particularly when we're talking about AI, which is, again, that does sit partly in the technology space, you would think of the CIO or the CTO maybe as being ones that would be driving that forward. But how you speak there, it must be a real collaboration. I'd just love to get your view on this before we move on. A real collaboration between the CFO, the CIO, the CISO, perhaps, as well as the CHRO. All of those C-level roles really need to come together in order to get this stuff right. Because it's not a technology project. It's not a finance project. It is an entire organization product if it's being done right.
Absolutely. And you're hitting a very, very important point. I think the collaboration between finance and tech is absolutely essential, and tech, and then human resources if you're looking broader at the organization. We're living in a period where everybody wants to say they're doing AI. So even in large organization, names and organization are reshaped to do that. But AI is a collaborative effort, and there's different components you need to have, and then there's different skills that you can offer. So if you're working in a tech organization, you obviously have engineering skills, software skills, platform, ways of working, agile. You have like a view of external technology, third party, etc. However, if this is not done in conjunction with the business, you might end up creating a hammer looking for a nail, okay? Which is something that might be technically very valuable, but doesn't really help. It's not very used. If you're seeing that from the business perspective, obviously the business, and I'm putting myself as part of the business, like in finance, so non-tech area, you do have the understanding of the business problems. So you do have an understanding of what the customers want. and you don't necessarily have the technical competencies or the mindset to look at the problem from the technology angle, which brings an interesting discussion, because there is currently a gap, I observe, in many organizations, and the gap between tech and the business is quite a fundamental one, which is, how do I translate a business problem into a solution that is valuable and then the business is going to use? And how can the technological boundaries being reflected in a solution that delivers value? So this is an unspoken gap that I think is behind many of the issues around AI programs not really delivering value or being slow, etc. So now the question is, are you going to fill that gap by bringing tech people and making them business people? Or are you going to do it by bringing business people and help them understand tech well enough so that you can speak to that? So different approaches. My approach and what I'm currently doing is the second one. So understanding finance and the businesses, I've been like commercial finance director in different markets around the world, etc., is training myself to understand AI, different techniques, learning even how to code. I started to learn how to code in Python just to understand the language, understand how software engineering works, how, you know, agile works, etc. Allows me to fill that gap and really help drive value. So I think that's a decision that organizations need to make, but it's essential to work together with the common view of, we want to solve the business problem. Technology is a solution. The business problem is really the driver. And understanding the business problem is important. And post-solution development, adoption happens when you co-create together. It's not a, give me the requirements and I'm coming back in 6 months and see your product, which is traditional, you know, like big projects implementation. It's co-creation. And in order to run co-creation right, you need to understand the business world and the tech world quite well. I think leveraging this space is really one of the keys that can make, you know, AI programs successful and deliver value.
I want to come on to a sidebar on your journey in finance. And you mentioned it there about some decisions that you've made about really getting up to speed with the technology side of this, which isn't completely typical of somebody in the finance leg of the organization. So looking at your career history on LinkedIn, Ricardo, you've had a wealth of experience in finance roles all over the world, Europe, Mexico, US, China, Hong Kong. How do you summarize the finance part of your career and what the key moments were for you?
So it is a very good question. And I was asking myself the question actually recently. And I think reflecting about my career, I started in finance, not because I'm passionate about numbers or because I'm passionate about protecting value. I started in finance because numbers and finance are a good way to understand the business, because in finance, you can see the whole business. And I love to understand how a system works and how all the pieces work together. You know, value is delivered. I've done different jobs in different markets across, you know, a variety of finance roles. I mean, started as a business unit controller. I worked in business intelligence, which was more like linked to market research, process improvement as a Lean Six Sigma black belt. I looked at process outsourcing. And I worked, you know, in as a CFO of a market, as a CFO of a business unit in a large market, in supply chain, and then talent and transformation and this job. And the constant for me has been to really try to understand in situations that were like change situation. Many of my jobs were, you know, starting a situation when something needed to be changed or transformed, etc. And how through people, and later on through technology, these could be achieved. And there's been, you know, few pivotal moments in my career. One big moment has been, I started in my, you know, home country, Italy, has been to decide to leave the affiliate I was working on in the previous company and move to Switzerland, basically, to run a regional project that at the time was not very fancy, not very interesting, etc. Because I saw the opportunity again of seeing how the world of finance was getting transformed through virtual working and then process ownership, etc. And that brought me to ultimately business process outsourcing, process improvement, which at the time were not so financy, were like probably kind of side. I'm always looking at optionality in a career development. I'm not looking at the next job of linear career. So I'm looking at what is my next career choice that opens up more options, particularly in a world that is changing. So before I join this job is what is going to be my next job that doesn't exist yet? What am I seeing? And I started to see AI becoming more and more popular. I started to see, you know, languages like Python become more accessible. And I'm going to get in there. Even in my previous job, I didn't have anything to do with AI because I think it's going to be the future. And then now I'm leaning into that. So I hope that explains a little bit.
Yeah, so you took certifications, Python for data science, AI and development. You did an Oxford University artificial intelligence program, as well as the, you know, the MBAs and all of that stuff as well. So really strong decisions that you've made there about, as you describe it there, that optionality. And those are, I would say, from having spoken with goodness knows how many CFOs over the years, not the obvious choices to make, but that's helped to position you back to where we are right now into this intersection, like you have finance, business, obviously in the industry you work in right now, but with this eye very much to the future, which is fascinating. I want to come on to some specific advice for finance leaders who, frankly, like many of us, are very much grappling with some of these big AI questions in their organizations. And it's fair to say that, to use another quote, and we've come across a few today, AI once unleashed is a very powerful tool, and with great power comes great responsibility.
Spider-Man.
I'd like to tap... Yeah, right. Okay. So in terms of understanding those risks, in terms of understanding some of the red flags and challenges that finance leaders watching and listening today might want to look out for. And first of all, we've mentioned it a couple of times, hype. There's a lot of inflated expectation about what AI can achieve. So as an AI leader, if I can call you that, how do you manage that hype, that expectation in an organization when you've got people banging on your door for whatever reason saying, our competitors are doing this with AI, why can't we? Or we're hearing about, you know, AI might be able to save us 10%, 20%. How do you manage that level of expectation?
So it is a very important point and very valid one, because every company now is trying to showcase that they have an AI strategy and invest in AI. AI, as I said, is a very broad term. And I think the first thing is to distinguish between personal productivity, which is, you know, at this stage already impacted positively by AI, from, you know, text-based automation, okay, large language models, which have revolutionized the perception of AI from ChatGPT onwards, are working on text very well. And everything text-based, document-based is actually quite impacted, and the automation in that space works very well. However, especially in finance, we work with data and numbers. In large language models, they don't do math very well. They basically pair sentences that are transformed into vectors with other sentences that are also vectors, and do a statistical correlation to see what is the most likely next, you know, sentence I need to get, right? And if you look at number analysis and generation, you do have a lot of other components, which is how your data is structured, your data quality, the different dimensions through which you want to look at data. They make it way more complex. So AI in that space is way more complex and requires more work. So I think, how do you manage the hype? I think there is a big place for managing a narrative. And obviously, either you manage a narrative or the narrative manages you. That's very important. And I think it's a delicate balance, because you need to showcase opportunities, outcomes, and future benefits while staying grounded in reality, because it's very easy just to overhype future benefits and lose sight that the reality is way harder, that a lot of programs are started and never scale. Scaling AI is very challenging. Adoption is not as simple as it looks like. And when you're looking at data and data analytics, the quality of data, the fact that as finance person, you want to have zero hallucination. Hallucination is a term that comes from, you know, as people may know, these large language models making improper connections statistically and getting results completely out of whack. You cannot get that in finance. So all of that is possible, is doable, and it's hard work. So blending reality with the future, you know, like benefits is important to keep the hype at bay. I mean, you want to ride a little bit the wave of enthusiasm because then you get investments and you get focus. And in a certain sense, we are now in a moment where there's a lot of, you know, like FOMO, you know, fear of missing out. So everybody needs to announce, needs to say things, etc. The lack of understanding of how the technology works and gets implemented make hype a little bit disconnected from reality. So I think you need to manage the future vision and reality kicks in narratives at the same time appropriately with different stakeholders. And that's a big part of a job when you're running AI programs. Because you need to manage different stakeholders' expectations and the resistance from other parts of the business they might perceive. And this is another part of the hype. So it's the flip of the coin of hype is excessive fear of AI is gonna kill my job, it's gonna all make us redundant, which is another kind of, you know, version of the hype. So you need to manage the narrative at the different level of the organization and selling and also implementing as AI, as augmented intelligence, as artificial intelligence. So those are tools that will help you make better, faster decisions. This is not just a tool that is going to kill your job. It's like, a machine in a plant that basically made your job of manual job quicker, more automated, safer. And then it allows you to, you know, to improve your productivity, right?
Yes, it's about not necessarily replacing people in finance or wherever, but it's acting as an enabler there. It's empowering teams to do other things that maybe that they were resource constrained to do before, for example. But, you know, there is, you know, you're absolutely right within that hype, within the expectations piece, also to talk about people in there as well. Because as we've said before, digital transformation has already meant an upheaval in many people's roles. Automation, intelligent automation, AI brings a lot of baggage with it because it's AI that also strikes fear as well. Speaking of striking fear, there are three letters that strike fear, I think, into those responsible for delivering AI projects. ROI. Now, I say that with a bit of tongue-in-cheek, but there's an element of truth in that, I think, as well, Ricardo. So how have you found it helpful to look at ROI for AI project implementations?
It is a very good point. And again, it depends on the type of AI you implement, and it depends on the timescale you're looking at. I think some personal productivity focus AI tools basically can measurably reduce the time people devote to certain activities and actually effectively giving you savings. The problem with that from the finance perspective is, first of all, that you're not looking at full FTEs, you're looking at, you know, chunks of someone activity. But the other problem, and you start to see it popping up more and more, is that unless you redesign whole processes, if I'm saving 20% of my weekly time downloading report and doing, you know, analysis, et cetera, and my job is not re-engineered to be focused exclusively on value, I'm going to use and fill this 20% of time with useless activity. This is human nature. So I'm going to start to recheck the numbers. I'm going to start to focus on other things that are not core to my job. So research says that actually these benefits are almost wiped out by the fact that, you know, like, you know, nature hates void. So void gets filled with whatever fills it. So this is one part. And the other part is, I think obviously, you can measure different type of AIs with leading and lagging metrics. Some AI tools allow you for additional revenue generation. Other ones help you with time saving. Otherwise, can replace bits and pieces of processes. Otherwise, can avoid potential costly compliance mistakes. But I think and you can measure that. I think the big realization I started to have looking at, different AI programs around is that AI benefits don't work in a linear way. So particularly in finance, we're, again, coming back to big tech projects, ERP, we are used to look at this project as milestones project that deliver linear value over time. AI is a co-created tool, if you're looking at specific tools, co-created tools that for a while doesn't deliver any value, okay? And when you reach a certain turning point, working with the business, when you get the right data quality over time, the right data architecture, and the right adoption, then you start to see exponential value. And that's difficult to, to digest for many finance people, because finance people like control, like predictability. There is an element of unpredictability and an element of flexibility in terms of benefit that you need to have. And you almost need to, endure a phase where you have investment, you're creating something valuable, but the value is not extracted yet, to get to a point where value explodes. And for finance people and CFOs who are listening to that, I would like to remind them that in the old era of ERP implementation, ROI for ERP programs was never happening in 2-3 years, okay? And it was an investment, there was a foundational investment platform to enable actually the finance function run better, faster, and more efficiently in the future, which was the case. So in many cases, AI investment is also the component of you're creating a platform that is going to be used to deliver a lot of use cases that have exponential value. So part of it is it's almost like an infrastructure investment you need to make. And that needs to be factored in ROI calculations.
And this comes back to the hype, the inflated expectations of that time to value. And the quote that you said earlier on, we overestimate the short-term benefit, but underestimate the long-term value there. And looking at that non-linear ROI, that fits very, very much into that. Ricardo, there's so many more areas around the AI opportunities, the AI challenges. We haven't got time to cover too many more. I did want to ask you just a couple of final questions, though. And here on the CFO Playbook, we speak with a wealth of finance leaders from all around the world, across many different industries. And we hear so many unique insights and nuggets of knowledge, indeed, as we've heard today. And we thought that what if we had a virtual CFO Playbook into which each episode, each month, we submit a new entry from each guest, a piece of advice that you wish you were given, or an experience that shaped you, or just a tip that you think might help fellow finance professionals. So I'm going to put that to you, Ricardo. What is your contribution to our virtual CFO Playbook?
That's very good. Can I have two things?
Yes, I'm sure we can squeeze them both onto our one physical virtual page.
My first one is, again, I'm going back to the quote, in skating over thin ice, our safety is in our speed. I think that's very important. Our safety is not in control guarding the past, but in speed and how we drive innovation from the finance perspective. And the other one, applying, the choices I made in my career to investment is when you're investing in the future, you need to look at optionality, not certainty. You need to invest in technologies, project program, they open up new opportunities in a space that will become valuable in the future. That is probably underutilized, et cetera. So those would be my two advice.
And that the last part of that advice, that works from as you've described it, both from a personal development, career development perspective, as well as from a kind of business development perspective as well. There is an element of a gamble in there as well, because I wish I had a crystal ball and I could have worked out that generative AI would kick off 3 years ago. maybe some people did, maybe some people were more informed than we were, but it certainly seemed to take a lot of companies by surprise, and we're still seeing the aftershocks of that right now. That's great. Thank you very much indeed for your entries into our CFO playbook. Finally, we like to ask what we call our showstopper question, a parting question. And in this series, we're asking our guests to give us their reflection on a phrase. And this season, that phrase is progressive finance. Progressive finance. So, Ricardo, what does progressive finance mean to you?
For me, progressive finance is a function that moves from being guardians of established processes and value to drivers of innovation that generates new value.
New value from being the guardians to being the inspiration, that inciting moment.
Almost like the catalyst of innovation. And obviously, there is an element, there's always be an element of, fiduciary element and element of trust and being the single source of truth that is part of finance. And it's very, very important. But there is another element of being the actor and the driver of value through innovation that finance should take. And this is, for me, progressive finance.
That's all we have time for today. Ricardo Caliano, thank you for joining us on the CFO Playbook. Grazie mille.
Grazie a te. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And don't forget to join us every month here on the CFO Playbook for more insights from finance leaders. But for now, from me, David McClelland, until next time, bye-bye.